top of the hour news. As it happens, when it happens, wherever it happens, local, regional, and global, only on Q95, the big station, Q95DA.com. Right on cue.
Good morning, this is the morning news for today, Thursday, February 15th, in the headlines. United Workers Party leader Dr. Thompson Fontaine highlighted the high Calypso ticket prices, urging for a balance between cost and quality for better accessibility.
Big Station, Q95.
The Caribbean Development Bank and Inter-American Bank launched a $5.22 million project to effectively respond to St. Lucia's existing and emerging healthcare system security threats. And Israel is facing growing international pressure to hold off on a planned assault on the last refugee for the displaced Palestinians in southern Gaza.
Five.
After the most truce talks in Cairo remains inconclusive to date.
Thank you.
Details coming up next.
Top of the hour news. As it happens, when it happens, wherever it happens, local, regional, and global, only on Q95, the big station, Q95DA.com. Right on cue.
Dr. Thompson Fontaine, leader of the United Workers Party, has raised concerns about the affordability of Calypso event tickets, particularly in light of the prevailing economic conditions. He emphasized the importance of considering the price of tickets and the quantity purchased by patrons. According to Fontaine, accessibility to cultural events like Calypso competitions hinges on finding a balance between these factors. Dr. Fontaine stressed that high ticket prices could deter many people from attending, ultimately impacting the overall success and vibrancy of cultural events.
You know, there are two components to the value that you get out of something. There is the price component and there is the quantity component, or the number of persons you can get to buy. Obviously, the higher you raise the price is the less people you get. And the reverse happens. Mm-hmm. The more you lower the price is the higher, you know. What you need to try to get is that balance between the price and the quantity that will give you what you're looking for. And I'm of the firm belief that $100 is a bit steep, especially in these economic times. Imagine I'm told that the price for the king has not increased over 20 years. So why the huge increase in prices to the patrons? I honestly believe that there is scope for this Calypso show to be huge. I believe that people will come from all over the island to support the individuals. And I was suggesting as well that as we have those different competitions across the island, that these individuals win, like in Grand Fort and in Marigot and elsewhere where they have those competitions, that these individuals should be a part of the elimination process coming towards the finals. Mm-hmm. It will get a lot more interest from the villages because they'll want to come and support their king on the national stage. And so you can see where you could have a lot more people coming into the shows, and with a lot more volume, you can have the liberty of probably lowering the price a bit.
Fontaine emphasized the importance of inclusivity when scheduling competing events alongside the Calypso competitions, advocating for prioritizing the art form as an integral aspect of Carnival celebrations undergoing development.
I mean, obviously, if you cut the price by half, you have to increase your volume twice to keep you where you were. But I'm convinced that you can get that. You can get not only twice as much, but probably 3-4 times as much as you're getting now, which would mean it would be a lot more profitable. Yeah, that's another issue. That is something I would like to see on that night. Exclusivity, you know, it is a carnival competition. It is carnival in Dominica. It's a product that we are developing, and it should be exclusive. And that is done in every country, you know, where you have those big shows, you don't have other competing events. And that's what those events are. They're competing events. Mm-hmm. Saturday night should be wholly and totally committed to a Calypso show. And, you know, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get people to support their own. You're trying to get people to support the art form, to support the product. And you don't want them distracted. you know, it's carnival time, people in the mood to have a good time and so on. And if the only thing in wrong town is a calypso competition, they will find their way there, you know. And because I see the way people react to the calypsos, I see the way people enjoy it, I see the way people, you know, take into the calypso kings and the queens and those who are singing, you know. So there is a lot of scope for it.
And that was United Workers Party leader Dr. Thompson Fontina. President of the Dominica Freedom Party, Johnson Boston, expressed his admiration for the recent Calypso finals, emphasizing the camaraderie among Calypsonians and supporters in the lead-up to the competition. According to Boston, the event was not merely a platform for singers, but also a celebration of the art form itself, with supporters demonstrating unwavering enthusiasm for Calypso music. Boston highlighted the sense of unity and mutual appreciation exhibited by both performers and their supporters.
All in all, I think it was a very good show, a very good competition. What I appreciate is the kind of camaraderie that existed among the Calypsonians, all of them. I mean, you hear them on the media together, you see them around the media together, and so forth. They sang at the various tents together, they sang on the title step together, and even the night of the final, you saw the Dice fans, many fans supported Trilogy, and the Trilogy fans, many of them supported Dice. So they were really about not person per se, but about the Calypso, the art form, and they showed respect to the Calypsonians, and I think that is good for Calypso, and we need to encourage that going forward. So we have to plan early and we have to do things properly. And all these other activities taking place during the season is something we have to look at. But I can't tell you, you have a queen show, which is to be on a Friday night. And you're promoting our young women as bold, as talented, as ambassador. And the night for doing that, you have another show taking place. And you leave the Friday now for some other things that is not, have nothing to do with us. I think people should look for other times during the year to have your event. Why pick it back on Independence Carnival, which are normal seasons that we embrace for our culture, and do all of these things and try to take away from the whole exercise and activities of carnival or independent or things like that. And I think people are saying, one, people have different choices. But in a small country and you're developing a nation, not, I don't think carnival is merely for just a set and series. It's about a consciousness, and we have to take that into account and grow as a people in that field.
President of the Dominica Freedom Party, Johnson Boston. Re-owned cultural figure Leroy Waddix-Charles has urged for a comprehensive assessment following Carnival, extending beyond community-level activities to encompass a national evaluation, including all stakeholders involved. He emphasized that such an evaluation should encompass various aspects, including the cultural, social, economic, and environmental dimensions of Carnival. He also stressed the importance of considering any challenges or areas for the improvement identified during the festivities.
Some recommendations. I think personally, right now, at this juncture, we need a serious national evaluation or postmortem from not only the community level. All the traditional and contemporary groups and organizations should be part of it. The Calypso Association, the organizers of the Delay Carnival, private promoters of events. Because right now, it looks like anyone can just have an event and they don't care about national or not. We interviewed some St. Lucia, and in St. Lucia, they told us live on radio that absolutely nothing interferes with any national event. So when there is a Calypso show, nothing happens. When there is a Queen show, nothing happens. But when all of these, the private activities can compete with each other. But nothing. Now I remember in 2006 when the Honorable Matthew Walter was the Minister of Culture, a cabinet document was passed to safeguard the national welfare of the festival, that no, absolutely no foreign band would be allowed to Dominica 1 month before and 1 month after. So if you figure out doing anything between that period, you would have to do it away. The only organization that was given some latitude was Flo Creole in the past. But now, the day before the festival, 2 days before the festival, day before Carnival, foreign act actually competing with, for instance, Maskam night. There was a foreign act in Coca-Cola. What are you telling Maskam, who have been virtual all night? Pack up. That's what you're telling a Maskam organization. This is ridiculous.
Charles emphasized the need for Dominicans to reclaim ownership and safeguard the island's indigenous traditions. He urged businesses and the media to join in this effort, highlighting the importance of restoring Carnival to its former roots.
Some way we have to take back control and try to protect and preserve what that is indigenous to us. Also, I think the business community should be engaged. I think all forms of media to include all radio stations, print media and social media, to revert the carnival back to its original t-shirt and costume days. Imagine, some returning Dominicans suggested last evening that if it needs to have a referendum for the change, then let it be so, because they are so fed up with the change of the t-shirt on one day and the costume on the other day. And then a critical thing I think we should check, the perimeter as is too big for the amount of activity. So even if you have activity on one strip, the other three-quarter or two-thirds of the perimeter almost empty. So I think possibly they need to look at shortening the perimeter. I think the Bayfront is good for the judging, but they should look at possibly shortening the perimeter to swing somewhere by Orchard and go across to KD Avenue, because the amount of activities, when we had all the villages involved, it was okay.
And that was a re-owned cultural figure, Leroy Waddix Charles. The latest Sagassum Sub-Regional Outlook Bulletin covering the period from February 1st to May 1st, 2024, forecast mild to moderate Sagassum conditions across the Eastern Caribbean coming in the coming 3 months. This bulletin, compiled by the Sagassum team at the Center for the Resource Management and Environmental Studies at the University of the West Indies, Barbados, indicates that Sagassum distribution in the Central Atlantic is currently lower than 40% compared to the same period last year. While there has been a reduction in dense surface accumulation since the previous month, detection of Sagassum in the equatorial region of South America might be hindered by cloud cover. In terms of the overall outlook, the influx of Sagassum in the Eastern Caribbean is anticipated to be mild to moderate over the next 3 months. Projections from the Northern Ireland suggest considerably lower influxes compared to the same period last year, with low but steady accumulations expected in March and April. For the Middle Islands, mild influxes are forecasted, with some peaking anticipated from late March into April. Meanwhile, the Southern Islands are expected to experience generally higher influxes than last year, albeit at a lower level. Influxes are predicted to decrease towards the end of February before resuming from mid-March onward. Finally, in the local news, Dominica's sports coordinator Trevor Chillingford expressed immense satisfaction with the exceptional performance and dedication exhibited by Stephen Pascal, the West Indies under 19 captain, during the recent tournament in South Africa. Chillingford emphasized that Pascal's leadership and team's overall efforts brought pride not only to the Caribbean region, but also to Dominica. He extended heartfelt congratulations to Pascal for his remarkable achievement, highlighting the significance of Dominica's contribution in producing a leader who has made history by leading a West Indies team.
We were truly pleased with what we saw on television. And we really want to thank you and the rest of your team for representing our region well. I know the speaker before me said that we did not make it all the way to the top, but we had only the rain to blame for that. Because probably had it not been the rain, we would have still been in South Africa fighting for the championship. So I want to really congratulate Stephen on his achievement, and we are quite satisfied that here in Dominica that we're able to provide the rest of the Caribbean with a leader, and that leader is Stephen Pascal. As a nation, should be proud of, because it is the first time in our history that we actually have someone from Dominica as captain of a West Indies team, and that cannot be seen as something that is beyond.
Chillingford advised Pascal not to view his role as captain of the West Indies under 19 team as a final destination, but rather as a stepping stone to even greater opportunities. He encouraged Pascal to remain diligent and dedicated, emphasizing the importance of hard work coupled with his existing skills and capabilities, along with support to achieve the level of success he aspires to attain.
We really want to thank Stephen. We were all happy with what we saw coming from him on the field. We think that he had the full respect and command of his team, and it shows that we can provide the region with good leaders. And these things are not happening by accident, because Stephen, we know, have been groomed to be a leader from his early days as an under 13 captain, captaining the Dominica under 13 team. He moved on to captain the Dominica under 15 team, the under 19 team, the Windward Islands under 17, Windward Islands under 19, and onto the West Indies under 19. Now that is something we want Stephen to also take note of, because we can see the gradual rise that you've been there for. There is still another level to go. So we are looking forward to you making that next step. Please do not think that getting to the under 19, that is the end of the road. You have to continue putting in the hard work. I know that you are committed. I know that you have tremendous support, especially coming from your father, who serves most of the time as your coach. So we are aware that you will get the type of guidance that you need, but the rest must come from you. And we are looking forward to you doing greater things for Dominica, for your family, and for yourself.
Dominica's sports coordinator, Trevor Schillingford. In other news, the Caribbean Development Bank, CDB, in collaboration with the Inter-American Bank, IDB, commenced a US $5.22 million initiative earlier this month, with the goal of enhancing St. Lucia's public healthcare system to effectively respond to existing and emerging health security threats. The project's exception arose from identified deficiencies in St. Lucia's health infrastructure during its response to the COVID-19 pandemic, and it's primarily geared towards enhancing disease surveillance, case identification, and monitoring capabilities within the health sector, ultimately aiming to mitigate the spread of diseases. Additionally, the project will facilitate the procurement of essential protective equipment and medical resources for healthcare workers, which is anticipated to enhance overall service delivery. Mrs. Therese Turner-Jones, Director of Projects at CDB, commended the government and people of St. Lucia for their commitment to strengthening the country's health sector post-COVID-19. She emphasized the importance of collaborative efforts to ensure the successful implementation of these initiatives, which will ultimately enhance St. Lucia's resilience. The financing for the project was provided under the Inter-American Development Bank's COVID-19 Organization of Eastern Caribbean States line of credit. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced on Wednesday that Israel would proceed with a military operation against Hamas in Rafah, the remaining shelter for displaced Palestinians in southern Gaza, after ensuring the evacuation of civilians from the area.
Fear is growing among Palestinians packed into their last refuge in Gaza that Israel will soon launch a planned assault on the southern city of Rafah after truce talks in Cairo ended inconclusively. Israel faced growing international pressure on Wednesday as talks in the Egyptian capital involving the United States, Israel, Egypt, and Qatar came to an end without any sign of a breakthrough. Officials did say, though, that Tuesday's talks were constructive and would continue. More than 1 million Palestinians are crammed into Rafah, next to the border with Egypt. Many there are living in tent camps and makeshift shelters after fleeing Israeli bombardments elsewhere in Gaza. The Israeli military says it wants to flush out Islamist militants from hideouts in Rafah and free hostages being held there after the Hamas rampage in Israel on October 7th. However, it has given no details of a proposed plan to evacuate civilians. The World Health Organization's representative for the West Bank and Gaza, Richard Peeperkorn, said an offensive in Rafah could overwhelm its already overburdened health system.
Military activities in this area, this densely populated areas, would be, of course, an phenomenal catastrophe and an enormous, would even further expand the humanitarian disaster beyond imaginations. A new wave of displacements and would also really give an increase in, of course, in additional injuries due to the military offensive and trauma.
Israel says it takes steps to minimize civilian casualties and accuses Hamas fighters of hiding among civilians, including in hospitals and shelters, something the militant group denies. Israeli forces shelled eastern areas of Rafah overnight, and pounded several areas of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza, residents said. Rafah neighbours Egypt, but Cairo has made it clear it will not allow a refugee exodus over the border. At least 28,576 Palestinians have been killed.
That's the morning news, and here's a recap of the headlines. Leader of the United Workers Party, Dr. Thompson Fontaine, highlighted the high Calypso ticket prices, urging for a balance between cost and quality for better accessibility.
Only on Q95.
The Caribbean Development Bank and Inter-American Bank launched a US $5.22 million project to effectively respond to St. Lucia's existing and emerging healthcare system security threats. And Israel is facing growing international pressure to hold off on a planned assault on the last refugee for displaced Palestinians in southern Gaza after the most truce talks in Cairo remain inconclusive to date.
Q95D.
I've been your presenter, Felicin Valmond.
Q, top of the hour news. As it happens, when it happens, wherever it happens, local, regional, and global. Only on Q95, the big station.